Step Into the Trademark, your go-to podcast for everything marketing in the trades. Hosted by award-winning industry marketing experts, Sarah Gerardo from Remarketable and Eric Thomas from Rival Digital. Together, we're here to unite the worlds of trades and marketing, bringing you insights, stories, and strategies from the heart of the industry. Whether you're a trade professional, a marketing expert, or somewhere in between, this is the place for you. Listen in as we're here for the big ideas, the game changers, and the everyday successes. Because at The Trademark, we're with the trades and for the trades.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of The Trademark. Super excited to have you all back here again for another episode. And we've got a really special guest with us this week, don't we, Sarah?
Yeah, we do. Super excited. So everyone meet Greg Towsley. And Greg, tell us a little bit about your background.
So I've been in the trades for a long time. It goes all the way back to 2007. I started a digital media marketing consulting company back in 2007 and was providing local businesses with SEO and search. And I decided to focus in on a niche, which was home services, specifically plumbing and HVAC, and did that for a while. And since then, I've had a passion for working with companies in the trades, and it's been great. It's exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome. I might be biased, but I think the trades is probably the best niche that you could choose for a business. So since then, I know that, you know, before we started recording, you'd mentioned that, you know, currently, you know, you're working a lot in Service Titan day in and day out, Marketing Pro. And I know that, you know, Sarah is also very knowledgeable on this topic. So definitely want to hear, you know, kind of what you're seeing, what, you know, as far as like what's working well for different, you know, campaigns, different campaign summary reports, stuff like that.
Cool. Yeah. And just to give a little bit of background, you know, I mean, Service Titan is relatively new on the scene. You know, when I started working with the trades, specifically plumbing and HVAC companies back in like 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, everything was done on a whiteboard. And so the phone would ring and the CSRs would answer the phone, and then they would write down on the little sticky pads and then put the job up on the board. The technicians would always come back to the office, grab the little sticky pads. So to fast forward, you know, I think Service Titan came on the scene around 2015, 2016, 2017, and really revolutionized the way that home service companies not only do their marketing, we can get into that, but how they answer the phone and how they do dispatch. And, you know, I launched an app really early. I think it was around 2012, a dispatch app. And, you know, the feedback that I got from a lot of owners of plumbing and HVAC companies, like, no way am I going to give this guy a smartphone. There's no way I'm going to give him an iPad out in the field. This guy can't even keep track of his tools. And you want me to give him a smartphone so he can call the office? That's never going to happen. And now if you look at where we're at, it is standard protocol for anybody that does home services. Even like locksmiths, they still have an iPad that are, you know, out in the field and doing estimates and jobs and interacting with customers, you know, in the digital format. So,
yeah, I think the trades have really become thought leaders in innovation. And especially with AI that's coming out, I see a lot of them playing to see, well, how can I automate this? How can I be more efficient? And I think that's really where, you know, we need to go just in general in the home service industry, because we are laggards on the adoption curve. It's just that, you know, we have opportunity to be innovators.
100%. And Eric and Sarah, let's be real. Things are still moving pretty slow when it comes to technology adaptation for a lot of the plumbing and HVAC companies, but the horizon looks pretty amazing. And the companies that are, you know, I listen to your podcast, I've listened to previous guests, I listened to a bunch of other podcasts, and the conversations now compared to like 2 years ago, you know, a lot of these owners of plumbing companies and, you know, even folks in, you know, how can we automate this? Or, you know, what's the digitization of, you know, our service offering look like? And I'm like, huh? I'm like, that was never part of the vocabulary 2 years ago. And now it seems like that's really the trend. But I would say things are still moving pretty slow. And you know, but the opportunity is, as the trades gets more and more automated, I think these companies are just going to run so much more efficiently and be more profitable.
Yeah, most definitely, because time hits your bottom line, right?
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's a good one.
And so you work with a lot of different companies working at Titan Pro Technologies. And what is the biggest opportunity that you see in using the ServiceTitan Marketing Pro platform? Like, what are they doing or not doing that you've seen?
So Sarah, you may or may not like this answer, but they're just not using Marketing Pro. Where they've read the literature on it, they've attended Pantheon, they've heard a lot of people speak about it, they've watched YouTube videos on it, but they're just not using the product. You know, even some of the basic features of it. You know, we can go into some of the features, but once companies start using it, you know, their return on investment, you know, just look at some basic stuff around aggregating reviews and getting reviews online. Just having that simple feature set up all the way to, you know, doing the VBB, which is the value-based bidding and integrating Google AdWords to get, you know, good data in around what you're currently spending on marketing. So just using the product and getting customers more used to some of the features and being able to grow with it, because there's a lot in there. And so you have to really take small steps to move the rate.
Yeah,
that's what I was talking to a client recently, and he had been on Marketing Pro for about a year. And he was like, can I cancel Constant Contact now? And I was like, dude, you could have canceled Constant Contact a year ago. And he was just like, he had Marketing Pro, but he just wasn't using it. Like you said, you know, to your point, he wasn't, not even like at all for that matter. But there are some folks that, you know, really aren't, you know, using it quite to its full capabilities. And so, I think the more people dig into it, that's when they become more efficient and they become smarter in their decision-making too. You know, once you start seeing, you know, what's working and what's not working, you know, with your PPC campaigns and with LSA and email marketing and all that stuff. And I know that you're talking about ROAS earlier, return on ad spend. Like that used to not be in the conversation from an advertising or a marketing standpoint. Like we used to just, before the GDPR days, we used to just like shit money into the wind on brand awareness and no one cared about ROAS. But now it's like, how much money did I make off of this campaign? Let's go look, and we can see that. And now we can, like you said, become more efficient, which helps with profitability.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of wasted spend in software just in general, right? Like we see these new shiny things and we're like, oh, like, let's go ahead and buy this. And then we don't use it. And that's the opportunity, is to utilize what you have, right? And it's not that we're always out there talking about what you can do and what you can do, but we know that only a certain percentage of people will take action, right? Like, I can give them the answers all day long, and I would say probably like less than 20% would actually do something with that information that's given to them. And that's where the mindset shift needs to come in. It's like, if you're going on a complicated software where it could be Salesforce, it could be QuickBooks, it could be whatever, if you're not fully understanding and taking the time to learn the software, then you're doing yourself just an injustice, because you bought this. Like, put action behind it, delegate the task, ensure that, like, you know, everybody has training on it that needs it, and develop processes and systems to make it work. And that's easier to say, because you have people that are still out in the truck, you know, wanting to utilize the software or any software, and they're like, I just don't have time to learn it. But that's the difference in, I guess, user levels. It's who is working in the business and who is working on the business. And so like, that's the tips that I would give is like, you have to really just shift your mindset and say, what am I going to do with this software? What's the goal? What's my intent? Like, does it make sense for my growth? Where am I at right now? And where can I be tomorrow? Most definitely.
So I think those are all great points. And I'm nodding a lot, trying not to nod too much, you know, agreeing with you. But, you know, I mean, I'm going to share something that I know, you know, Sarah, and then Eric, obviously, you know, but it's kind of for the listeners, just some real basic things regarding ServiceTitan. And I look at instances of ServiceTitan customers that are using it pretty much every day. And I can say, you know, just off the top of my head, I've looked at over 50 different users that are, you know, 50 different companies that are using ServiceTitan. And one of the most basic things is within the campaign summary report is to set up phone numbers associated with each one of your campaigns. So as it retains to marketing, you have LSA, you have Yelp, you have your Google business profile, you have your website, you have landing page, you have Angie's. You know, I mean, I could go on and on, but just having dedicated phone numbers to each one of those, never mind your direct mail or any direct response that you're doing. And that's super important, because as customers find you on all these different channels, if you have a good dedicated number, I know both of you know this, but that phone number will track how many calls you're getting, how many booked calls you're getting, how many jobs run you're getting, and how much sales you're getting from that particular platform. And you take sales divided by what you're currently spending on that platform, example, you know, LSA or Yelp, and that gives you the number that, you know, as marketers, we talk a lot about, which is ROAS, return on ad spend. And that's super simple. It's a setup feature within ServiceTitan. That's not even ServiceTitan Marketing Pro, but just doing that, you know, as, you know, our conversations about marketing on the front end is going to yield a lot of good decision-making data on the back end.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know both of you guys know that, but I thought maybe if anybody's listening, that's, you know, pretty basic stuff. And that, and I'm not seeing that out there. And it's cool when it is done effectively, because, you know, you can make some really smart decisions, whereas, you know, Yelp's not working or LSA is working, or you get the idea.
Yeah. And so when you talk about ROAS, what is a good ROAS that people should be looking for? I think, you know, we use so many acronyms. We're like return on marketing spend, return on ad spend, return or marketed expense to revenue, or marketed expense to income. Like, what am I looking for from a business perspective of like, how much money do I want to get back on my ads?
So Sarah, that's a pretty open-ended question. And I can speak from my experience only. And most recently, I came from private equity. So I was for the last 2 years, I was part of a roll-up. So we had a good amount of companies that we were able to draw that information from. And I also recommend, you know, collaborating with whatever marketing firm you're working with, because that's kind of their responsibility to generate some of that data. So one of the goals that we always shot for is 3X. So anytime you can get a 3 or above on ROAS, and again, ROAS, just as the definition that we're talking about here, at least from my lens, is the sales divided by what you're currently spending for that particular channel. So if you can get a 3 or above, obviously your LSA, you know, you're paying per lead. So, you know, and then each channel varies, but your LSA should be 7 or above, so 7X on ROAS for LSA. You know, there's going to be people out there at 7. You know, I'm 22X on LSA. You know, but each platform, I don't think we need to go into each platform, but, you know, if you're getting a 3X ROAS on, you know, your direct mail, your obviously your website, you're probably not spending as much. So that's just kind of what we shot for, is bare minimum 3. Otherwise, you know, you really have to cancel that campaign or look into what's wrong. I'll bounce it off of you, Eric and Sarah. What do you guys see for a good ROAS number?
For us, here's a classic marketer's answer. It depends.
I was trying to avoid the expense, but
yeah. So what we always like to do before, you know, asking or even trying to shoot for a particular, you know, ROAS number is to understand what their, what the contractors, either their break-even point or their what their net is. Because, you know, a 3-to-1 for someone at a 25% net is going to look a lot different than a 3-to-1 at someone at a 7% net. And so we always like to understand what their net is first before we, so then we got to know like at least how much we got to make for them to make a dollar. So from there, but yeah, you know, generally I always tell the team, like, let's shoot for a 7, shoot for an 8 and above, you know, on any type of paid channel. You know, if we fall short, then it's still typically a profitable campaign. Of course, obviously, you know, organic's going to be much higher because, like you said, the spend's a lot lower. But and the quality of leads from organic are also a lot better. So hug your local SEO person today.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. And I would say the same thing. You need to know your break-even point because it looks different for every company and it hits differently on the P&L. So really knowing what that, you know, break-even point on your return on marketing spend is in line with your business will help you decide of what you need to see. We went for a 4x min, and then we would evaluate the campaigns based off of a 6-month, and it would depend on the campaign, right? On how it's performing, because it's not like, oh, it's going to be piss poor 1 month and we're going to turn it off. We're going to have to optimize it. Like marketing is a test, right? Like when I think about it, marketers are probably the biggest gamblers because we have someone else's money that we're spending and we're like, hey, look what we can do. And we're just testing. We don't know if anything is tried and true until it becomes tried and true. And so, you know, really just understanding that perspective of like, hey, we're going in this and we know that this works, but we don't know if it's going to work for you. That's really the truth, right? And marketers don't really tell people that, but like we are risky gamblers is what I like to say with other people's money because our money is not being spent.
That's a good point. And then each area of the country, you know, Northern California, Southern California, Florida, New England, you know, the flyover states, each market is completely different. And it always, you know, I'm always wrong. I think this is going to happen. And then I'm always wrong. But I always try to take an educated guess, like this is going to work or, you know, so the data is key. Also, putting context around the data, whereas, you know, sometimes numbers can tell different stories.
I think that's the best point. Everyone in the company has a different story on the data. The owner sees it as way differently than the marketer, right? We're like, oh, I can see the conversions that are happening or not happening throughout the entire customer journey. Whereas the owner is like, oh, I see the bottom line numbers. And they need to stay high level. The CSR sees their own numbers. The dispatcher sees their own numbers. So everyone has a different story. So aligning that story to make it make sense is really important for culture, is what I've noticed. You know, having those all team meetings, talking about the numbers, talking about EBITDA, talking about gross margin, like teaching your staff to act as owners and understand the metrics from the high level story so that they can own their own stories in the data and be able to repeat it back to others.
Yeah. Sarah, can I double click on exactly what you just said? And I knew that this was going to come up because I know you fairly well. And, you know, we had this conversation in a boardroom in Dallas, Texas, when I met you many, many years ago. And a perfect example of this is you use the 5-letter word calls as an example. As a marketer, calls mean something. As an agency, an SEO, calls mean something. As a operations manager's calls mean something. As a technician, calls mean something. And as the owner of the company or an operations person, like a chief operations officer, calls mean something completely different. Then you talk to the private equity folks, calls mean something different. And so we could break down that that definition of calls for each every single one of those persons. And I guarantee you're going to get five different definitions. So you highlighted a keyword, culture. And I wish I had a dollar for every company that I went into or that I talked to that just didn't have clear definitions around any one of these topics, like jobs, appointments, run, calls, you know, I could go on, you know, KPIs, you know. So yeah, that's a challenge. And I don't, you know, it's a challenge within our industry across the board.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to mention the word conversion rate, which means, you know, I mean, like, what does that mean either? You know, guys are talking out on the YouTubes and the intrawebs about my conversion rate is 43%. And then they put their stake in the ground. What does that mean? I don't know. Calls is 43%, or conversion rate on jobs, conversion rate on sales. Like, who knows? So anyway, you hit the nail on the head. It's the company culture and, you know, communication with inside the company. Never mind, you know, how important communication is to the customer. But anyway, I just wanted to go on that little tangent.
Yeah, no, that was a great tangent. Like that makes sense. And for those listening, you know, when you're building your business, understand that you're building people. And I think that's the important part. And the important part is to teach people numbers, because what they don't know, they don't know. And conversion rates are based on every little interaction that one person could have. So the call center has conversion rates. The technician has conversion rates. Dispatch has conversion rates. And the technician has multiple conversion rates, right? Did they sell memberships? Did they have add-on sales? Did they have to go back on a call and make no money from that call? So then you just wasted how many dollars, right? So there's a lot of things that need to be measured within the entire customer journey just to make sure that you're profitable. So yeah, we could talk about that stuff all day long, but very, very good tangent that you went on. Because I just really enjoy it. I really enjoy telling people of like, hey, it's not your marketing, it's your operations, because maybe because there's a little bit of bitterness to me, because it's like, oh, I got blamed for a lot of things sometimes as a marketer, like, oh, why aren't the phones ringing? And I'm like, dude, I gave you a bunch of phone calls, but you just didn't convert them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I can only control what's in my control. And then you have to think bigger, right? Like, the bitterness has to go away and you're like, cool, they don't have scripts. Cool. They don't have like training. They don't have a process. So that's all the things that you have to create as a marketer to help aid the conversion. And I think a lot of that's the missing piece that a lot of marketers stop at the campaign level. They're like, look, my job's done. And you're like, no, no, no. Your job is just starting. So.
Yes. Sarah, the flip side of that, one of my favorite text messages that I used to get, or I still do get, or emails is, hey, can you turn the phones off? We're booked for the rest of the week. And then me on the other, oh yeah, I'll just, let me run over to the office. I'll unplug the electricity to turn the phones off. Like, obviously I know what they mean, but you know, as a marketer, that's always a good thing. By the way, that's not just like one company that I work for. You know, I mean, I work for a big plumbing company that had 13 locations and the, you know, 13 different operations managers. And they'd be like, hey, turn the phones on this afternoon, or turn them off. That's, you know, all the, you know, not all the communication, but that was like the primary communication. And then, you know, just seems like operation managers rely so heavily upon marketing to either make the phone rings or, you know, turn the phone ring, just keeping that board full. So anyway, yeah. I always chuckle when I'm like, yeah, can you turn the phone off this afternoon? But make sure you turn it up tomorrow morning. Okay.
Right. You're like, magic doesn't work like that, but we'll see what we can do.
Yeah. Beep, boop, beep, boop. I turned it off.
You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? They obviously aren't saying that literally, but you
yeah.
know, that's just the message that comes over the wire.
Yeah. Yeah. Most definitely. And sometimes, like, we don't even know the capacity, to be honest. It's like the call center has a capacity board and then the dispatcher has a capacity board. And you're like, do you speak to one another? Like, are you matching? And then they're like, well, we need calls. And you're like, what? You told me that you didn't. I thought we were fine. So yeah, the reaction as a marketer, it can be, you know, it's a big, deep breath sometimes is what I like to say. But I have a question. So what's one piece of advice that you would give any business owner just starting out with marketing today? Like, what would you say to them?
So specific starting out with marketing?
Yeah, they're just starting out. They're like, oh gosh, I know I have to do marketing. Like, I've been doing referral based for so long. Now what?
So it's pretty basic, not a very fancy answer, but to know your numbers. And if you're just starting out with like either, you know, Marketing Pro or Service Titan, or, you know, is experiment. And I like the, and I've always felt this way, is multi-channel. So you got to be everywhere. So, you know, you asked for like somebody just starting out would be to work with a good agency and go with the multi-channel approach. So multi-channel, just be in as many places as you can. So Yelp, Angie, you know, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Threads, Instagram, you know, be everywhere.
Yeah. And Eric, what advice would you give someone just starting out?
Ooh, I like that question. You know, that's the question I used to always ask people too. Yeah, definitely knowing your numbers and knowing your break-even point for each day. Because if you know your break-even point, you know, as far as like if it was a good day or not, as far as profitability, once you hit that break-even point, then you can empower your, you know, anyone on the team, the comfort advisors, your CSRs. You can start wiggling on price if you need to. You can start to, you know, be a little bit more empowered to take a risk once you've hit your break-even point for the day. And then if you haven't quite hit your break-even point, then you know it's time to smile and dial and get that board full until you know, so that you make up for it the next day. But I would also say, like, I think also a lot of times, like, there's a lot of good technology out there. And I think when you're first starting out, you don't always need all of it. Like, I think a lot of people really just forget the fundamentals of running a business from a marketing and advertising standpoint, from an operational standpoint of sometimes it doesn't take, you know, a shiny object to become a $1 million company. Sometimes you just need to roll up your sleeves and just be a little gritty. And I think a lot of people forget that sometimes.
Yeah.
Eric, that's a good point. And I feel the pain for a lot of these home services companies. When I say home service, not only plumbing and HVAC, but roofing and everything that falls within home services, because it seems like the marketing, or, you know, back to what we talked about, getting the phones to ring, it seems like it can be so challenging for these operators because they're getting hit with so many different shiny objects from so many different, and nowadays there's so many different agencies. So they're being pulled in so many different directions. But Eric, to your point is, you know, go back to the basics, work on building your brand, work on, you know, generating reviews, work on word of mouth. And, you know, utilizing the tools. And like I said, getting a good agency that communicates well, you know, so trying to take all that noise and just boiling it down to, you know, what you would have done 15 years ago, which is take out the biggest ad in the yellow pages. But now just, you know, the tools and resources have changed. So Eric, to your point is try to just come with a simple approach.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of times too, you know, like you were saying, there's so many different, you know, companies and options and stuff like that out there. And there's times where, you know, we've seen contractors where it's like they're going from this agency to that agency, from this CRM to that CRM, from this finance provider to that finance provider, from this call center to that call center. And I'm like, you're spending all your time in onboarding with stuff. Like, imagine if you just stuck with one thing for a year with all the things that you need and just focused on the business instead of, you know, switching every, you know, 3 to 6 months on stuff, how much farther they could be ahead. Like, these, you know, a lot of these things, when you change, it should be a good change, but I think a lot of times people think that change is what's going to make the phone ring and what's going to make them a successful business, when that's just not the reality of it.
Yeah.
That grass is not always greener.
No, grass is only greener where you water it. And you have to optimize your, even with your agencies, right? Like, you have to create a partnership. and listen to one another, because you don't know it all. They don't know it all. Google, everyone's changing every single day and the landscape is constantly evolving. And so if you can create a partnership where, hey, you see something that maybe you can just share with your agency, and maybe they already know, who cares? If you're wrong, you're wrong. If you're right, you're right. But at least the idea is out there and that partnership is created by sharing mutual strategies or you know, understanding. Now, the changing of the agency, like toilet paper, it doesn't make sense, right? You're not even giving it a chance. And maybe you don't have a great partnership and maybe you don't like the attitude. Okay, fine. Like, then it's not a great partnership. The culture fit's not there. But you analyze the culture of that agency as well as, you know, the data and the outcomes that they've delivered before you even say yes. And so, you know, I keep seeing this online. They're like, well, we've gone to 3 to 6 different agencies within the last year. And I'm like, you haven't even given anyone a chance, you know, like it takes time to test things. So totally on point with that in general. My other question to you, and we're going to switch topics on to automation and efficiency using AI. So Greg, where do you see the best use case for AI in the marketing field?
So I was listening to a recent podcast of Ara, the CEO of ServiceTitan, and I'm going to bring it back to ServiceTitan because that's kind of where I've been living inside of for like the last 5 years and doing a lot of consulting with companies right now. And one AI feature that I do see on the horizon, maybe it'll be rolled out at the upcoming Pantheon conference, but it's called Universal Inbox. So you can think about these companies and CSRs that are going through their day-to-day, and they're generating leads and phone calls from so many different sources. So Ara was talking about this concept using AI for the universal inbox and the prioritization of leads in that inbox. So I'll just explain it real quick. It's kind of like, you know, Gmail, but you have leads that come in from Yelp, you have LSA leads, and each one of these lead gen sources, including Angie, or even some agencies, they all have, you know, their own inbox. So if ServiceTitan, and by the way, I've been begging for this product for a long time, but if ServiceTitan was able to say, okay, all leads are going to go into, say, Marketing Pro or just within ServiceTitan, this universal inbox, and then we can use smart technology, i.e. AI, to filter which ones are, you know, real customers, that it would be super cool, super efficient for CSRs, make marketing look like a hero. And then, you know, AI is really good at lead scoring. So, you know, maybe the Yelp leads get pushed down a little bit, LSA gets pushed up a little bit. And, you know, when people provide, check this out, this is pretty crazy. This is, you know, blows my mind. But when people provide their address, and by the way, all the call answering and the call recording, like CallRail and Mongoose Met, you know, all those call answering, you know, when a customer provides their home address, that data point that you get on an inbound call, or just think about that one data point, that meta data that is collected, whether it be over the telephone, which obviously you can record that and capture that, or on a particular lead that's sent over, you know, you can do some really, really rough guesstimating on what the quality of that potential home is. Not to freak people out, but there's all, every single business has what I call honeypots, you know, and you want to fish where the fish are. And if you have good bait, you know, you're going to load your boat up with fish all day long. And a honeypot is just like a particular street in a neighborhood or a geography of the city. Think of your given city where you live. And it's not always the high net worth home individuals that generate the most amount of revenue or have the highest sales rates. A lot of times it's not the high net worth areas. Sometimes it's the other side of the track, or it's kind of that in between. But you can imagine, you know, when a lead comes in with that data point of the address, you know,
yeah,
I can think off the top of my head, you know, I'd much rather go to that house. And it's not the car that's parked in the driveway. It's like, okay, this neighborhood, they're really good at, you know, getting approved for finance. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So just those things, universal inbox and, you know, what you can do with that data point. And think about roofers too. You know what I mean? We're not only talking about plumbing and HVAC, but the roofing companies with, you know, okay, next to, almost Service Line's working on this, but next to that lead that just came in from Yelp on the new roof, I can see the roof via global satellites that Elon put up there. Mm-hmm. That's, you don't need a new roof. I don't know what they're calling. Maybe they have a leak. So let's pass that. Anyway, you got to stop me, but you know, and then AI is not anything new. It's not a shiny object. We've been using it. You know, if you drive your car, if you have a new car, you know, I mean, AI is keeping you in the lane. So it's always like, you know, how can we capitalize on AI? I'm like, using it every single day. You know what I mean? Look at your Gmail. It's, you know, it's already there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sorry, but I tend to go off.
I could do the same thing. I'm like, here's all of my ideas. And they just look at me like, what is happening right now? And then they say the same thing back to me, but in a way of a developer standpoint or engineer. And I'm like, cool, but the people that we are marketing to are not engineers. So I'm going to tell you what it sounds like from a normal person. And I think like you have great ideas. Like you can see the whole home in like the neighborhood, right? Like for instance, is the plumbing, you're having plumbing problems in your home in the neighborhood. You can only imagine that the entire neighborhood was, you know, not piped correctly. So
100%, right there. Hey, we did three homes on the street. You know, it's because the town screwed up the sewer lines.
Right, because the grid got rained.
Sorry, I did not mean to cut you off, but that means, hey, we got to send our best drain tech because, you know, he's the guy that can solve that versus sending, you know, the faucet guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also just making sure when you're there and you identify that, you know, making sure that those vans are stocked full of door hangers and yard signs and all the other things, all the collateral that they can need. So that if someone sees that opportunity, you know, say they're up on a roof and they looking around the neighborhood and they see six or seven other roofs that look like crap. It's like, maybe we can stay in this neighborhood, keep getting work in this neighborhood. There's opportunity all around us and start putting out door hangers and yard signs. You know, I don't understand what I'm about to go on a tangent. I don't understand why everyone's so dang scared to put out yard signs. The worst thing that's going to happen is that it's going to get pulled up and thrown away, unless you're in California where there's probably some law that says
there's some laws
in California, they're probably like going to arrest you. And I'm just kidding. But I'll tell you one thing. When I worked at Mosquito Joe, we used to have these like local marketing days where we would go out as a team and just litter the town with yard signs. I mean, litter. And I know I don't work there anymore, but this past week I was driving to the post office and I had known that they must have had one of their marketing days because I must have seen at least 250 Mosquito Joe yard signs just in one area of town. And it's like, it's brilliant. Like it's all you can think of at that point. So if you're in that neighborhood and you've got the yard signs, just go start sticking them out, maybe not in people's yards, but at the nearest intersection. Or when you're at a stoplight, hop out and put one in the ground. Worst that's going to happen is it's going to get pulled up and thrown away.
Well, Eric, that's a good point. You know, what's one of the best lead gen sources is when you see the truck at your neighbor's house and you have that same nagging problem. And it just goes down to, it just gets back to marketing basics is, you know, you're only going to buy from people who you know, like, and trust. And you would kind of think based upon, you know, your neighbor that, hey, they probably, you know, called the right guy to solve the problem. And so, you know, having the good signage on the truck and in the neighborhood, those are the best leads.
Yeah. And what if the signs were like fun, right? Like it wasn't like, you know, Frost Boss is here, call today. What if it was like, I fixed your pipes, or like, I cleared your pipes, like something, or like hilarious. I don't even know. I'm not even thinking funny things, but like, and then the slogan was just fun. Like, I feel like sometimes we are so direct. We forget to have fun in our marketing and our advertising. And so, and yard signs can be hilarious. What if you had a child draw an image for you, and then you went and just taped it up on the street sign, and you're like, that's an advertising. They'd be like, why is there a child's photo? And then you're saying, oh, enter a contest to win. And those people that run by it, you know, see that. And it's just, it's guerrilla marketing. It's just different ways to get out there and be different, you know? And I think like, that's the point. It's, how are you going to be different? Yes, your truck's showing up. They can't be white vans. It's just, A, it's just totally inappropriate at this point in time, right? Like, kidnappers are real. Like, don't be a white van. But at the same time, like, show your brand in different ways and be creative and be fun and be out there in the community as much as you can. Maybe not littering is the best word. You just litter everywhere, but you strategically place your yard signs so that they will get seen.
Sarah, a good example of this is a company that you and I both know, that we both have visited before a while back, Milestone out in Dallas, Texas. Their billboard, I'm not going to describe it right now, but their billboard has a really cute dog on it. And they have like a QR code and a landing page driving people to that cute dog. And I'll let people, you know, go out and Google it on themselves, because I'm not going to do it justice, but it's completely different. And it's cool. It's a dog contest billboard that they are putting all over Dallas. My brother lives there. He's seen it and he's taken pictures of it. He's like, how come you don't do this? I'm like, well, I wasn't really given the opportunity to do anything like that, but it's really cool.
Yeah,
dog. We'll do that in like the show notes or a link or something like that. I'll show you an example, but I've been using that one over and over again.
Yep. I know Lee's Air Conditioning did a billboard for a coloring contest from a local children's hospital.
Love
you
that.
You know, there's so many brilliant ideas out there. Like, how can you showcase them? How can you get them involved? And people love dogs, they love children, and, you know, they love cute things that get their attention. So yeah, they expect, what do you think a consumer expects from when a plumber shows up at their house without service titan? Like, what if you just had to hire a plumber, what would you expect for that plumber to do when he comes to your house, and how would he look, or he or she look?
I'm afraid to answer that on the air.
Are you asking me the question?
Yeah, I'm asking you the question.
So I'm not a good person to ask, because I've been in the industry for like 15 years, but I will tell you my biggest concern, and I share this in every single one of my trainings, or every single one of, like, you know, anytime I'm in the CSR meetings, which I've been into a lot of, you know, my biggest concern is, you know, especially in today's day and age, is I want to have comfort from the company and the person that is going to be showing up in my home. I could be at work and my wife's at home with the two young kids. My kids are old now, but two young kids. I just want to know that when I do send that plumber to my house, there's going to be a level of professionalism, and I want to feel more comfortable. And that's the same thing if, you know, my wife, I'm using me as an example because you asked me, if my wife is calling a company, one, I want to make sure that they, you know, I'm going to check the reviews for somebody that's going to be coming to my house. And then two, I'm not as concerned about the booties or looking clean or the truck being immaculate, but I want that person to, you know, have my vested interest in mind around fixing the problem. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the more that the business owner and the business and the company culture can do to, you know, break down those barriers. Like, I love the idea, and this is integrated into service Titan, but hey, you know, Johnny is going to be coming to your house, and then, you know, here's a 5-second video of what Johnny looks like, so you can keep an eye out, and he's not going to park in the, anyway, you get the idea, but to make that customer feel a little bit more comfortable around having an individual into their house with a, you know, and they're not happy that person's coming over, you know, they got a problem. So when that person shows up, to be professional and, you know, showing sincerity around, you know, how that customer feel. And that is really hard for a technician to do because, you know, he might have just got off the phone with his boss or his manager, or he might have just had a bad call. And these guys, you know, I mean, I feel for them because they're going from personality to personality to personality, and everybody's human. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And Eric, what would you say?
You know, I don't remember where I heard this from, but I heard a statistic about how if, and this is a statistic in regards to like females and how they view service professionals. And it was something about like, if there's a service professional coming to do work like the next day, that like females get like 40% less sleep or something like that. Don't quote me on that, but I heard it on a podcast somewhere. And that was pretty eye-opening to me. It was like that there is some subconscious anxiety around a stranger coming into your home, regardless of any stereotypes about any type of trade or, you know, what they might be. There's generally anxiety around letting people into your home that you don't know. So I do think, you know, to really hit home on that point, Greg, like you were saying, the more you can do prior to service, and not just, you know, when they're on their way, the day before, 2 days before, you know, leading up to that appointment, as much as you can do beforehand to remind them, to introduce them to, here's a fun fact, he loves puppies, whatever it might be. And then he shows up and he's got milk bones and he's got a puppy.
Yeah.
It's, you know, for me as a homeowner and my experience with, you know, different service professionals, it's frustrating when I don't get any reminders. And then they call me the morning of, and they're like, hey, just want to make sure that 12 is still a good time. And I'm like, I called you like 3 weeks ago. I forgot that I even booked this.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, as much as you can do leading up to that appointment, because it also helped, you know, if you can catch that cancellation 3 or 4 days before, it's going to be a lot more, there's going to be a lot more wiggle room for you to backfill that opening in the calendar, you know, than if you get that cancellation the morning of or a couple hours before because the customer forgot you were coming. So, yeah, I guess my answer would just be, you know, as much as you can do to personify your company and make the customer, you know, feel like they already know you before you show up, the better.
Yep. And then after, right? I think a lot of people forget about the nurture. So either the conversion didn't happen or it did, and either way, they need to be nurtured. Thank you for letting us come out to your home. These are either simple emails or like just another part of a connection. Right? You've got to continue that customer journey and direct them to where you want them to go. I think that's also really important. Being professional as a female, I can say that having someone in my home is sometimes nerve-wracking, but at the same time, like I do this for a living. So I just watch the experience and then I'm always rating the experience, right? Like, okay, and I rent, so it's a property manager experience. So it's totally different from any other, you know, if I would have called a company. But it's really, for me, it's like, I want to be talked to like I'm not in, like, I don't know something. Don't assume that I don't know what's going on. Like, I called you. I you know, did my research. I figured out what the problem was because it is just me. And never like treat people appropriately. I think that's really what I would say to business owners that are coming out there, or not business, small business owners that maybe don't have a system in place. Start your system with the brand experience and the customer experience. And really understand that you are speaking to many different people throughout the day, but each person is still just a human, as Greg said. And, you know, what we don't know, we don't know, but what we do know, like, watch out because I'm watching you.
I think you're spot on there with the, like, the post service as well. Just a simple a simple little thought of gratitude goes a long way for sure there. Like I remember at one time I got my car serviced, and when I got my car back, there was a little bag of candy and it said, "Have a sweet ride home." And that's my auto shop for the rest of my life, as long as I live here, because it was like three or four Jolly Ranchers and maybe like a Reese's or two. And it just said, "Have a sweet ride home," probably cost them $1.50. And it made, I have never forgotten it. Same with another Mosquito Joe thought, you know, because it was, you know, outdoor pest control, we always had to make sure that if the customer had any animals, because there's a period where you have to wait before your dogs can go on the grass. And so if they had a dog, every technician, at least here in the Virginia Beach area, we had Frisbees that had the Mosquito Joe logo on it, and they would just throw one into the backyard before they left, you know, for the dog. And so just imagine, like, you're a homeowner and you let the dog out and the dog comes back inside with a Frisbee with your logo on it. Like, how cool that, I mean, I just think that's pretty neat.
Yeah. Those little leave behinds, you know, they matter greatly. And you don't have to spend a lot of money, and just like you said, candy with a sticker on it. Or what if you did a QR code? A lot of people do QR code magnets. They do QR code stickers on units, you know, like, there's a lot of different leave behinds that you can do. But the more, like I like to say, the more Instagrammable the leave behind is, I think that's really where it's at, because you want people to share the service that they just had. But more than likely, they're going to share what you left behind, because it's either cute, quirky, or something that they will use, or just maybe they won't use. Or maybe they'll give it to their kid and their kid carries it around all day. You know, think of like a little Hot Wheel, or think of like a little stuffed animal that looks like your logo and your mascot. So all sorts of leave behinds are a great part of the experience, you know, and even like thinking about, okay, well, you might be there for one part of the home, but what about thinking about the whole home and, you know, giving them a calendar of when the different things in your home need to be serviced, you know, like just little things that really, that are inexpensive to make. You could make that on Canva and print it out really cheaply. So,
On this topic, one of the stories that I always share, which I find remarkable, is we interviewed and we did some ride-alongs with this super successful comfort advisor or channel leader, whatever you call him. But this guy crushes in terms of, you know, what he makes per money per year on his, you know, in his paycheck, as well as what he sells. And the story that I tell, that he shared with us when we were really deep diving on like, what makes this guy so successful? Why does he 10x what every other comfort advisor and channel leader does? Is he had two really simple icebreakers that he said on every single appointment. So there's never any time that he didn't walk into the house that he said this. And it gets back to like knowing your audience. So if he was dealing with a woman who had kids or had a dog, or, you know, even if she was elderly, he would position it. But he would always say, you know, I'm here because, and this is what was his opening line. And I'll give you one for the male, like the homeowner, like either like the dad or the father figure or the female. But if it was a female, he would always say, like, as he's bending down to like put his booties on, or before he walked in the house, he would always say this with like a chuckle or a smile without making eye contact. Has this particular problem been an issue for you for a little while? And he would say some variation of that. And that just like opened up, you know, the welcoming him into the house. Or if it was the male counterpart of the house, he would always say with a smile, have you tried to fix the problem? Or like, you know, what have you done to try to fix it? And like, that was just like his opening line. It broke down all the barriers. It brought in like the human connection, and he did it on every single call, almost like, you know, he was an actor, you know, on, you know, in front of the big screen. But yeah, at that point in time, all the barriers are broken. And, you know, she's talking about like, yeah, Jesus Christ, I wouldn't have you out here if, you know, the kid's bathroom worked. And, you know, he's like, yeah, I know.
Yep. Yeah, that kind of reminds me of like,
because, you know, he was just magical on how he just said that exact same phrase depending upon the audience. And he tailored a little bit, you know, if it was elderly or, you know, a young mom or, you know, a college, you know, student.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like I didn't bark.
Sorry, that was Matt. That was my dog.
I'm just kidding. My dog didn't.
Yeah, starts barking at the end of like every podcast.
I can think of no better way to land this plane than to have a dog barking. It's my favorite. I love dogs. So yeah, so Greg, kind of as we're tying the bow on this one, wrapping it up, you know, kind of like a last tip before we dip kind of deal. We're looking forward to a rough year. We're in probably what's going to be a pretty rough year for some folks. You know, what's your, I guess, piece of advice for folks for this year specifically, from now until the end of 2024, that like if they want to stay afloat and really just make sure that they come through, you know, what is another, you know, election year, is like the one thing they got to do.
So I always go back to, you know, knowing your numbers and come up with that. No matter who you are, if you're in operations, if you're a channel leader, a comfort advisor, if you're the owner of the company, come up with, you know, two or three, you know, I call them KPIs, key performance indicators, or mm-hmm. goals, and then, you know, prioritize your day around, you know, those particular numbers or those particular goals, and say, hey, you know, I'm given all of these particular, you know, things that I have to do today. Are they going to help me achieve, you know, and I recommend, you know, two or three of them, are they going to help me achieve, you know, this number or this goal? So just to keep it simple, and I have to do that in my day-to-day, like every hour, you know, because I see a lot of shiny objects and I have a lot of squirrels running around up here. But mm-hmm. keep your eyes on the prize.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Awesome. Well, Greg, this has been fun. It's been a quick hour. Definitely appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule to chat with us. And what are some ways that our listeners out there can connect with you or learn more about what you've got going on?
I think the easiest way is LinkedIn. I tend to be a LinkedIn guy. I try to post there often, interact there on often. Anytime I see Sarah or Eric's post, I always give it a like. I think that's probably the best way to connect with me. And then my phone number's on there. So I carry this thing around in my pocket. And every time it rings, I answer it, unless I'm sleeping, or even sometimes I still answer while I'm sleeping. So I'm pretty easy to find and collaborate with. And I look forward to reaching out to as many people. I love your podcast. I love what you guys are doing. And I love home services. And I'm going to stick around for a while. So it's pretty awesome.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. It's been just an absolute pleasure catching up with you again. And I appreciate your support.
Likewise.
And that wraps up another episode of The Trademark, where we bridge the worlds of the trades and marketing one story at a time. We can't wait to see you next time. Thank you to The Trades for giving back big, loving big, and taking massive action. Don't forget to join us next time for more engaging conversations and innovative ideas. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review and share it with your colleagues and friends in the trades and marketing. Your support means the world to us. Stay connected with us off the air by following us on social media. We'd love to hear your thoughts and get your feedback. Until next time, keep making your mark in the trades. Thank you for listening to The Trademark. Goodbye for now. And remember, we're with the trades for the trades.